finding a hoodie that lasts through the season can be tough. The American Giant Classic Full Zip Hoodie is made to last a lifetime, so you can count on it to bring you comfort and warmth year after year. The iconic Classic Full Zip Hoodie is the jacket that started it all for American Giant. Custom heavyweight fleece and side panels for mobility make it the best hoodie ever. And a double-lined hood and reinforced elbow patches means this hoodie will last. Born from a commitment to support the communities that create its products, every American Giant piece is made in America and designed to last. No exceptions. The result is durable clothing, like the premium Slub Crew tee, no BS high-rise pant, and slim roughneck pant that become part of your life. Snag the hoodie that will bring you comfort for life, the American Giant Classic Full Zip. And save 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
You know that wellness goal you set at the start of the year? It's not too late to stick with it and make your future self proud, especially with the all-in-one nutrition shake from Ka'Chava. With 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and more. No fillers, no nonsense, just the highest quality ingredients. Stick with your wellness goals. Go to Ka'Chava.com and use code NEWS for 15% off. That's K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com, code NEWS.
The Thanksgiving turkey is barely cold, but the MLB hot stove is already absolutely scorching.
Yeah.
Welcome to the baseball podcast.
It is. I mean, if you thought things would cool down after the Dodgers raised the trophy, you were completely wrong.
Not at all.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like we're deep in the offseason, but the market just exploded right out of the gate.
It really has. The pace this winter has been, well, pretty much unprecedented. Usually you see teams do this slow, intricate dance, right? They wait for the winter meetings to really set the market.
Right.
But this year, a couple of huge dominoes. I'm thinking of that Mets and Rangers trade and then the Blue Jays signing. It's like they've just accelerated the timeline for everyone. Position players, top tier pitchers, everything is moving.
We're talking about huge landscape altering moves from the jump. The New York Mets sent Brandon Nimmo, a huge fan favorite who had just signed that massive 8-year deal.
Just a year ago.
Exactly. Sent him packing to the Texas Rangers for Marcus Semien. I mean, that move alone signaled a radical, immediate pivot in Queens. And then you have the Toronto Blue Jays just firing the first cannon shot in the AL East arms race.
And that's exactly what we're going to unpack today. We're going to dive into these monumental shifts, these huge financial gambles teams are taking.
We'll look at the high-stakes decisions facing these clubs, especially the ones trying to, you know, unseat the Dodgers' new dynasty.
And we're going to get into some of the surprising trade targets and the really complicated contract situations that are already defining this winter.
We've got some incredible stories for you. We're going to look into that absolutely electric 60 home run season that carried the Mariners to the brink of the World Series.
And the really complicated futures for guys like Nolan Arenado and Jeff McNeil, veterans who could be on the move.
And you will not want to miss this. The mindset of the Japanese pitching star who explicitly told executives he does not want to join the Dodgers super team because, in his words, he wants to take them down.
It's fantastic. It's not just about who spends the most anymore. It's about who spends the smartest. We've got the analysis to show you which teams are making strategic investments and which ones. Well, which ones might be buying a very, very expensive bust?
All right, let's jump right into the biggest money move of the winter so far.
Let's do it.
Let's start with the most expensive commitment we've seen, the Dylan Cease mega deal. I mean, the Toronto Blue Jays were agonizingly close to winning it all in 2025.
Two outs away, just painful.
Two outs away from lifting the trophy. Right. And that pain, you can just feel it, clearly fueled their urgency. They didn't just go shopping. They bought out the entire luxury store.
They absolutely took a bold, and I mean costly, gamble. And you have to look at the context here. The contract is reportedly 7 years, $210 million.
So that's a $30 million average annual value, an AAV of $30 million. For a starting pitcher in this market, that number just jumps right off the page, especially when you look at his track record.
It really does.
Okay, so let's get into why this deal is being called, you know, exorbitant by some people. Cease is the definition of boom or bust.
Right.
The boom part, you can't deny it. 215 strikeouts in 168 innings in 2025. That level of swing and miss is absolutely elite. His stuff is just phenomenal.
It is. His stuff metrics are top of the league. But the market and the Blue Jays are pricing him as a true number one ace, and his production profile doesn't quite match that long-term reliability you want.
So you have to pair that immense upside with the immediate risk.
Exactly. He had a 4.55 ERA last season. That is significantly higher than what you'd expect for a $30 million pitcher. And maybe more critically, his innings average was low.
How low?
Just 5.25 innings per start. So you're paying ace money for these huge strikeout numbers, but you are absorbing the risk of, you know, mid-rotation innings length and a ton of volatility.
So a part of me looks at this and just asks, Toronto, are you desperate? Are they compensating for the fact that their development system might not have a frontline starter ready right now? Or are they worried that their window, you know, with their core guys, might be closing soon? Is $30 million for a volatile pitcher a sign of panic?
I think it's a calculated risk born out of necessity.
Yeah.
The Blue Jays front office looked around and realized they had to do something big to separate themselves from the Yankees and solidify that rotation now.
Before the other top arms came off the board.
Precisely. If they waited, they risk losing out on everyone. So they're effectively betting $210 million that their pitching development staff can cut his walk rate and turn that 5.25 innings per start into, say, 6.5 innings per start.
And if they can do that?
If they can fix that command, they have an annual Cy Young contender. But if they can't, that contract, like you said, could become a huge, huge burden. They'd be left with a right-handed, high strikeout, high walk version of Blake Snell.
But the immediate impact on that roster is undeniable. He slots into a rotation that already has Kevin Gausman, Shane Bieber, who they brought back.
Which was a huge move in itself.
And Trey Savage, that high upside prospect. I mean, all of a sudden, that looks like arguably the best rotation in the entire American League.
It creates this immediate, almost overwhelming depth. The addition of Cease presumably pushes Jose Berríos, who's a proven veteran, a guy who has performed in big games.
Right.
It pushes him to the number four or number five spot in the rotation. That kind of luxury, having that quality of an insurance policy, that's what championship teams are made of.
And there's a stat that really underlines the potential dominance here.
It's a great one. Cease and Gausman, as a pair, lead all of Major League Baseball in total strikeouts since the start of the 2020 season.
That's a 1-2 punch that is just designed to overwhelm any lineup you face in October.
Absolutely. And the mentality of the organization seems to reflect the urgency of the deal.
Yeah, Max Scherzer, who they got late last year, and Vladdy Jr., they've both publicly referenced that Kobe Bryant job's not finished mantra after losing the World Series.
So this Cease signing is management basically declaring to the fans, we are doing everything we possibly can to win it all in 2026.
Okay, so that brings us to their biggest rival. Because this huge financial commitment and the aggressive speed of the Cease deal makes the silence from the New York Yankees all the more striking.
It really does. The Yankees are, at least publicly, just sitting on their hands.
They seem fixated on their big targets, Kyle Tucker and Cody Bellinger, but they haven't made that splash that their fan base is expecting, especially now after seeing Toronto just leapfrog them in the rotation rankings.
And we heard from the owner, Hal Steinbrenner, about this. He was asked about this perceived inaction, and he expressed concern over the Dodgers dynasty for sure. He acknowledged the competitive gap.
But he also pushed back pretty hard on the idea that the Yankees have to match the Dodgers dollar for dollar.
He did. He gave a strong, pretty detailed argument against that whole spend-to-win narrative.
So what was his counter-argument, specifically?
He argued that the correlation between just raw spending and winning championships is, in his words, weak. And he used 2025 as the prime example. He pointed right at the Mets, who had that massive payroll and missed the playoffs entirely.
And contrasted that with who?
With the Brewers, a small payroll team that ended up with the best regular season record in the entire National League. He believes it's about the strategic efficiency of your spending, not just the total amount.
But isn't it a little easy for an owner of one of the richest teams in the world to make that philosophical argument when his team already has pretty significant financial constraints?
That's the real issue here. Yep. They absolutely do. It's not just a philosophy. There are concrete hurdles. The Yankees already have a massive payroll overflow, and their flexibility got even tighter because of one specific thing.
Trent Grisham accepting the qualifying offer.
Exactly.
Okay, explain for everyone why that $22 million acceptance is so critical to their flexibility right now.
It all comes down to the competitive balance tax, the CBT, and its tiers. The Yankees are already deep into the penalty zone. Now, when your own player accepts the qualifying offer, that entire salary, $22.025 million, immediately counts against your CBT calculation.
And that pushes them even further into the highest penalty bracket.
Right. It dramatically increases the cost of every single additional dollar they want to spend on a big free agent like Kyle Tucker or Cody Bellinger. That acceptance didn't cost them a draft pick, but it severely, severely limited their financial wiggle room.
So the Yankees had to be incredibly precise. The pressure is on, especially with the Blue Jays loading up next door.
It's intense. Most analysts believe the Yankees need a huge splurge. They need to land one of those big targets, or as one insider put it, two or three swaps completely off the beaten path if they want to win the winter.
And if they strike out.
The narrative will be terrible. And beyond that, with the Blue Jays getting Cease, a lot of people are already viewing Toronto as the prohibitive favorites to land Kyle Tucker, the best bat on the market.
So New York could miss out on the top bat and a top arm and just get left behind in a division that is only getting stronger.
That's the fear in the Bronx right now.
Okay, we've established the arms race in the AL East, but the action is definitely not limited to free agency. Let's shift over to the National League, specifically the New York Mets. They made a truly radical pivot with that Brandon Nimmo for Marcus Semien trade.
That was a genuine shock to the system, trading Nimmo, who was productive, a leader, and just 1 year into that 8-year contract.
For Semien, a veteran infielder.
Yeah.
It's just such a clear statement from the new front office.
It absolutely confirms David Stern's strategic goal. He's prioritizing defensive stability, he wants immediate roster flexibility, and he's shedding long-term contract risk, even if it means giving up a superior offensive player like Nimmo.
Nimmo was a fan favorite, too. I mean, known for his relentless hustle. Moving him sends a really strong message to that clubhouse and that fan base. What does it tell us about the Mets' new strategy?
It signals a deep philosophical commitment to asset management and future planning. By taking on Semien's remaining years, which are shorter than Nimmo's deal, the Mets get that flexibility. But more importantly, they're signaling that pretty much any non-untouchable player, especially anyone signed by the previous regime, is on the table.
If the return is right?
If the return provides that combination of defensive value and organizational flexibility, it's a ruthless approach, but it could be a really effective way to reshape the roster.
So that Nimmo trade immediately creates an infield surplus, which of course brings us to the growing trade speculation around Jeff McNeil. This girl.
He's the next logical domino, right? After Nimmo leaves and Semien arrives, the Mets are loaded with infield and utility options. You've got McNeil with his proven defensive versatility and his contact first bat.
And then you have the younger, high upside prospect, Lysan Gil Acuña.
Exactly. So the front office has this critical choice to make. Do you stick with the proven high floor player in McNeil who gives you immediate...
You know that wellness goal you set at the start of the year? It's not too late to stick with it and make your future self proud. Especially with the all-in-one nutrition shake from Ka'Chava. With 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and more. No fillers, no nonsense, just the highest quality ingredients. Stick with your wellness goals. Go to Ka'Chava.com and use code NEWS for 15% off. That's Ka'Chava.com, code NEWS.
Value. Or do you commit to Acuña, who offers more speed, more positional flexibility, and that untapped power potential.
Trading McNeil now, while his value is at its highest, feels like the classic David Stearns move.
It really does. And if they do decide to move him, the Angels seem to be the primary trade partner. The Mets are specifically targeting pitching in return to replenish their system.
Okay, let's look at the two pitchers they're reportedly focused on from the Angels.
The main target, the highest value option, is a guy named George Klassen. He's rated by some as a top 5 Angels prospect, and his appeal is pretty simple.
The velocity.
Triple-digit heat. He has an electric fastball that sits in the upper 90s, so he's pretty close to being MLB-ready with, you know, mid-rotation upside. He was great in AA recently.
But every high-velocity arm comes with that detailed scouting report on the risk factors.
Huh.
What's the catch with Klassen?
It's significant control risk. They call it reliever risk. He was a control challenge arm in college, and while he's worked on it, the high walk rates are still there. It's common for guys who throw 100 miles an hour to struggle to harness it consistently.
So the Mets would be betting on their player development system.
Exactly. Betting that they can convert that high octane stuff into sustainable command.
The second name is Sammy Natera Jr., a lower cost, high intrigue lefty. Tell us about his profile.
Natera is a fascinating story. He's a late bloomer. He didn't even start pitching until he was 17, so even though he's 26, he has a really low mileage on his arm. That's a huge plus.
And he broke out recently.
big time in the Arizona Fall League. He showed off a mid-90s fastball, even touched 98, and paired it with a sweeping slider that gets a ton of swing and miss.
So he could be a fast mover.
Yeah. Big frame, lefty profile, and the potential to move quickly through the upper minors as either a high-leverage bullpen arm or just a low-cost rotation option. He'd be a value play for them.
And the Angels' ability to even make these trades is driven by a massive internal financial shift of their own.
The Anthony Rendon contract situation. This is the definition of clearing a legacy burden off the books.
A new era in Anaheim.
It really is. After Rendon's retirement and these contract buyout discussions, plus trading Taylor Ward, the Angels are executing a major financial reboot. They're moving on from those past big money mistakes.
So how does the Rendon buyout specifically help their spending power this offseason? This is where it gets a little complicated.
It is, but it's all about that competitive balance tax accounting. Right now, the Angels have about $40 million they could comfortably spend. Rendon was owed a massive amount of money. If they can execute this pragmatic buyout, they're looking at eating over two-thirds of his remaining deal right now.
That's a big immediate cash hit.
It is, but it allows them to defer the final, more manageable chunk, about $12.8 million across 2026 and 2027.
And the CBT implication of that.
That's the key. By deferring that last bit and accelerating the rest, they free up an additional $30 million this year in immediate CBT space.
Wow. So that could potentially double their free agency budget.
It could. It catapults them from being a mid-market player to being competitive for guys like Cody Bellinger, Bo Bichette, or even the Japanese superstar Munetaka Murakami. They are clearing the decks now so they can play at the top of the market this winter.
That is fascinating. A classic case of short-term pain for long-term strategic gain. Let's turn to another veteran third baseman who's dominating trade rumors, also dealing with a big contract, Nolan Arenado in St. Louis.
Yeah, the Cardinals, after trading Sonny Gray to the Red Sox, are now entirely focused on moving Arenado. And the new team president, Shane Bloom, has been unusually blunt about it.
What did he say?
He stated publicly that after some internal discussions, quote, "We all feel like it's best to find a different fit." I mean, that level of public admission all but guarantees a trade is coming.
But finding a trade partner is going to be incredibly difficult given his recent performance. His 2025 season was just a continuation of a slide we've seen since his great 2022 campaign.
The numbers are stark, especially for a player of his caliber. He posted a career low slash line of .237, .289, .377. That gives him an 87 OPS plus in 2025.
So significantly below league average offense from a corner infielder.
Way below. And if you look at the underlying analytics, the real concern is his hard hit rate. It has just plummeted down to the 12th percentile over the last 2 years.
What's the reason for that? Is it mechanical or just age?
Most analysts point to an age-related decline in bat speed. He's turning 35 in April. And that's coupled with a tendency to chase more breaking balls out of the zone, which leads to weak contact. The defense is still elite, though.
That's the thing. He's still a gold glover.
Oh, yeah. Plus six defensive runs saved, plus three outs above average last year. But teams need more than just a great glove at that salary.
And what exactly is that salary commitment?
He's owed $37 million for two more seasons, plus the Rockies are still kicking in $5 million. So a team is acquiring a declining bat, albeit with that great glove, for $37 million a year.
So who can possibly afford that risk? Who are the fits?
The only viable fits are major market teams with a big, obvious hole at third base. So the most plausible destinations are the Red Sox, especially if Alex Bregman signs elsewhere, and the Phillies if they decide to trade Alec Boehm, who's entering his final year before free agency.
So both have the payroll and the immediate need to absorb that contract.
Exactly. And they'd be betting that the defensive value and the leadership he brings outweighs that offensive decline.
And are there teams that should absolutely be running in the other direction from this deal?
Oh, absolutely. Analysts are practically screaming warnings at small market clubs that already have internal solutions. Take the A's, for example. They need offense, sure, but they have Brett Harris, who is cost-controlled and actually provided superior defense on a per-inning basis last year.
What about the Royals?
The Royals have Michael Garcia established at third. For a team like Kansas City, that $16 million net salary is just, it's called excessive. Pursuing Arenado would be a financially and strategically terrible decision for them. They just cannot afford a below-average offensive bat with that kind of price tag.
The trade market is so intricate, so much financial cleanup. But the biggest dollars, they're still waiting for the top free agent bats.
Yeah.
And leading that chase is Kyle Tucker, who some are calling the market's apex predator.
And that's a pretty well-earned nickname. Tupper is widely expected to get the biggest contract this offseason. Some projections are putting his value up to a staggering $427 million.
Wow.
At age 28, he is right in his prime. He's got power, plate discipline, consistency, five-tool ability, and he plays solid defense in the corner outfield.
Okay, let's talk about that $427 million number.
Mm-hmm.
What's the comparison that's driving a projection that high?
It's the comparison to guys like Juan Soto and Ronald Acuña Jr., who signed those long-term, team-friendly deals earlier in their careers. Tucker has sustained elite production all through his arbitration years, and now he's hitting the market at the perfect age to command maximum length and value.
So he's projected to have, what, 5 or 6 years of peak performance left?
At least. And in today's market, where superstar contracts are easily breaking 350, that 427 number represents the premium for a highly durable, complete offensive threat.
And of course, we have to talk about the Dodgers. They are back-to-back World Series champions, yet they are strongly linked to the biggest name available. How is that even possible?
It just speaks to their relentless pursuit of perfection. They're champions, yes. But their 2025 outfield offense was, believe it or not, a real liability. It was described as pretty mediocre and even an offensive black hole for long stretches of the season.
I remember that.
Yeah, their overall offense was great, but the outfield posted a dismal .299 on-base percentage and just lacked consistent power. Tucker changes all of that overnight.
So they're fixing a glaring weakness, even though they just won a title.
Exactly. And Tucker is the perfect fit for their young core strategy. He's 28, so he aligns perfectly with the window of Yamamoto and Ohtani. They see an opportunity to replace a position of weakness with an immediate superstar who can stabilize their lineup for the next decade.
And then on the other end of the spectrum, you have a team like the Brewers, won 97 games, but they recognize they just cannot compete in this arena.
The Brewers are the perfect example of that market disparity. They won through superior drafting and development. And while analysts agree Tucker would be an excellent fit for their needs,
of course he would.
The club knows they won't even be in the sweepstakes. Their strategy is to identify cheaper, high-floor veterans, and that's just the reality of operating with a constrained budget against teams like the Dodgers.
All right, the next big offensive name is Cody Bellinger, who seems to have finally put together the season he needed to earn that massive long-term deal.
Bellinger timed his opt-out perfectly. He had his best season since his 2019 MVP year, slashed .272, .334, .480 with 29 homers, 98 RBI.
And crucially, he maintained that defensive versatility.
Oh yeah, stellar defensively. Plus 7 outs above average across first base and the outfield. That versatility just significantly boosts his market value.
And the battle for him is going to be intense. Who are the main competitors here?
The competition is reportedly confined to the 5 richest teams in baseball. The Yankees are desperate to bring him back. His left-handed swing is just tailor-made for that ballpark.
He just owns that ballpark.
He does. The Mets have an immediate outfield opening after the Nimmo trade, so he's a natural fit for their power needs. A Dodgers reunion is always possible, but the primary bidding war really seems to be between the 2 New York rivals.
Let's pivot to Pete Alonso and the extremely messy situation his free agency is creating for the Boston Red Sox, who are reportedly very interested.
Alonso opted out. He's looking for an ambitious 7-year deal, and Boston's interest, on paper, it makes a lot of sense. He hit 38 homers with 141 WRC plus last season.
And he's that right-handed power bat that Boston's left-skewing lineup desperately needs for balance.
Exactly. But signing him means someone else gets displaced. Specifically, Triskin Casas and Masataka Yoshida. This feels like a recipe for some internal chaos.
It creates a huge domino effect for that front office. If Alonso comes in, he is the full-time first baseman. That means Triskin Casas, a recent top prospect, is either relegated to a DH bench role or, more likely, he gets traded.
And Casas struggled mightily in 2025 before that knee injury, so trading him now, while his value is low, is a really complicated decision given his team control.
And what about Yoshida, who is also a massive recent signing?
The consensus among analysts is that Yoshida's production as a DH doesn't warrant a starting job for a serious contender, especially a team that has other holes to fix. If Alonso takes first base, Boston probably needs to trade Yoshida to open up that DH slot or just to free up cash.
It's a real conflict. Spend big on Alonso, but then you have to sacrifice a recent big investment in either Casas or Yoshida.
Right. And meanwhile, the Phillies are dealing with a standoff of their own with their star slugger, Kyle Schwarber.
Schwarber was the...
You know that goal you set at the start of the year? You can still do it. Whether you're committed to a thru-hike with friends, lifting heavier, or simply walking more, it's not too late to stick with it and make your future self proud, especially with the all-in-one nutrition shake from Ka'Chava. Because quality nutrition shouldn't be complicated. Just 2 scoops of Ka'Chava's all-in-one nutrition shake, and you've got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and so much more. Plus, it actually tastes delicious. No fillers, no nonsense. Just the good stuff your body craves. So instead of adding to your backstock of supplements that overpromise and underdeliver, simplify your progress with just 2 scoops of the highest quality ingredients. Stick with your wellness goals. Go to Ka'Chava.com and use code NEWS for 15% off. That's Ka'Chava.com and use code NEWS. K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com, code NEWS.
NL MVP runner-up in 2025 after clubbing a monstrous 56 home runs, the Phillies have said re-signing him is their number one priority.
But his agents are wisely capitalizing on that monumental season, and the reports are that the two sides are not close to a deal.
And the critique we're seeing is that this delay is creating a sort of organizational opportunity cost. How does that paralysis actually manifest itself?
It's simple market leverage. Until the Phillies know Schwarber's intentions and the final number on his deal, they're financially and structurally paralyzed. They can't seriously pursue other high-end bats like Alex Bregman or make a trade for someone like Ketel Marte.
Because they don't know if they'll have the payroll flexibility or if the DH spot will even be open.
Exactly. The longer this negotiation drags on, the more likely it is they miss out on other market opportunities that are moving quickly.
And we had that rumor about the Pittsburgh Pirates being linked to Schwarber. That seems absolutely ludicrous given their spending history.
It did. That rumor got a 9.9 out of 10 on the industry's skepticism meter because, frankly, it just defies all reality.
The Pirates have never spent more than, what, $17 million on an external free agent?
In franchise history, right. So while it would be a phenomenal move for their fan base, analysts are viewing this as pure lip service. They're trying to convince the MLBPA and their own fans that they're trying to spend without any real intention of paying Schwarber the $25 million a year he's going to command.
Finally, let's wrap this segment up with the bizarre JT Realmuto market. He's the top free agent catcher, but the reported interest from the Red Sox is baffling a lot of analysts.
It truly is confusing. It highlights a potential lack of strategic focus in Boston. Look, Realmuto is a clear upgrade over almost any catcher. He still hit a consistent .257 with 12 homers last year, and his arm is a legitimate weapon against the running game.
So if he's an upgrade, what makes the interest so baffling?
It's about their organizational priorities. Boston has gaping holes at first base, third base, and in the middle of their bullpen. What they don't need is another catcher.
They already have Connor Wong and Carlos Narvaez.
Right. They just tendered contracts to both of them. They're controlled through 2028, and they'll cost a combined $2 million next year. So why would you spend $18 to $20 million a year on Realmuto when you have cheap, young options and far more pressing needs elsewhere?
And his defensive profile is getting more complicated too, isn't it?
It is. While that arm is elite, his pitch framing was among the league's worst last year. He was measured at -9 runs.
And in the modern game, framing is arguably the most critical defensive skill for a catcher.
It is, outside of blocking. So signing Realmuto means you're sacrificing value in that critical area for an expensive and frankly unnecessary upgrade at a position where you already have depth. It just seems strategically backward.
The free agent market for bats is moving fast, but the pitching market is just as dramatic, especially with the global interest focused on Japanese star right-hander Tatsuya Imai, who is arguably the best pitcher available after Cease.
Imai's free agency story is fantastic because it brings us right back to the dynamic of the Dodgers super team. He made headlines by stating very explicitly that he does not want to join the Los Angeles Dodgers,
who already have Ohtani, Yamamoto, and Sasaki.
Right. He sees that as the easy way out. He wants to, in his words, take them down.
That is a massive competitive statement.
It speaks to this profound competitive edge and a really unique desire for self-reliance. He said he wants to seek the sense of survival that comes from overcoming cultural and linguistic differences on his own.
So playing with other Japanese stars would be a crutch in his mind.
Basically, he feels like he could just ask questions and take the path of least resistance. Instead, he wants the ultimate challenge. competing against baseball's reigning dynasty and proving he can dominate independently.
So that immediately changes the conversation about where he might land. Where are executives predicting he'll actually sign?
An ESPN executive survey has the Giants as the favorite with 5 votes. The idea of pairing him with Logan Webb to immediately challenge the Dodgers is really appealing.
And buying them.
The Yankees, and surprisingly, the Dodgers were tied for 2nd with 3 votes each. Despite what Amy said, teams still believe money and comfort could end up swaying him.
If the Yankees landed him, that would be a huge statement. It would create a phenomenal rotation. What's the general contract prediction?
The expectation is that the Yankees will ultimately land him for something around 7 years and $196 million. Even with Hal Steinbrenner talking about financial restraint, the Yankees still have the ability to outbid almost anyone when they target a specific international free agent they believe will define their rotation for years.
Another team scrambling for pitching is the Cubs. They desperately need to make a move after missing out on both Sonny Gray and Dylan Cease.
The urgency in Chicago is acute. They view the 27-year-old Imai as the ideal philosophical fit for them, a young star they can pay for future performance, which aligns with Jed Hoyer's long-term plan.
And what is it about his stuff that they like so much?
He has a really high ceiling because of his unique pitch mix. It's led by a spitter changeup combination that generates just unusual movement and really low contact rates.
And even with the emergence of that rookie, Cade Horton, who had that incredible 1.03 ERA in the second half of last season, they still need major upgrades.
They do. Horton and the return of Shota Imanaga, who took the qualifying offer, that's a good foundation. But the rest of their rotation is either volatile or aging. The Cubs have made it clear they're pursuing multiple trade options to get 2 more reliable starters. Guys like Michael King, Mackenzie Gore, and Joe Ryan are on their list.
They have to turn that rotation into a strength if they want to get out of the NL Central. Let's talk about a fascinating experiment. The closer-turned starter. Free agent Ryan Helsley, an elite closer, is being pursued as a potential starting pitcher, with the Detroit Tigers as the main suitor.
This is a classic cheap, buy low, high upside gamble for a financially constrained team like Detroit. And it's not coming out of nowhere. Helsley was primarily a starter in the minors. He had a 2.84 ERA across 69 starts down there.
So the Tigers need pitching help, and Helsley is a way to potentially acquire a front-end arm without paying top-end free agent prices.
That's the idea. But the risk of converting a high-leverage reliever back into a starter is immense. There are a lot of pitfalls.
What are the main ones?
The biggest risks are injury and a decline in velocity past the 60-pitch mark. Closers train for max effort over 1 inning. Converting to a starter requires building up to 100 pitches while maintaining efficiency, and that often results in a 1 or 2 mile per hour drop in velocity as the game goes on.
But if it fails, he can always go back to the bullpen.
Right, which is the safety net here. He can revert to being a high-leverage reliever, which Detroit still needs. But they are gambling their rotation hopes on a massive structural change to his arm care and his workload.
Switching to bullpen health.
Yeah.
Josh Hader. He suffered that capsule sprain in his throwing shoulder that ended his 2025 season in August. Where does his recovery stand?
The reports are that Hader is back to normal. He avoided surgery, which is huge, and has completed his throwing program. He's expected to be ready to go for spring training.
But that injury raised some serious workload concerns, especially after he kind of reversed his long-standing approach to multi-inning appearances after he signed that big contract.
That's the critical narrative that has to worry the Astros. Hader historically avoided multi-inning outings before he signed that 5-year, $95 million deal.
And after he signed it.
He reversed course. He made 7 multi-inning appearances in 2025. That significantly increased the stress on his arm, and it culminated in a season-high 36 pitches right before he got hurt.
And given his unique mechanics, what's the long-term prognosis for a recurring injury here?
His mechanics are the issue. Hader uses a really pronounced cross-body pitching action. And while that's great for deception and movement, it places significantly more strain on the shoulder capsule and the labrum than a pure over-the-top delivery.
So analysts see this as a potential recurring problem.
They do. And while Hader insists he's still open to multi-inning work, his long-term health is a serious question for the Astros. That violent delivery style is just inherently higher risk.
Before we move on from pitching, we have to talk about Paul Skenes and the pre-arbitration bonus pool.
Skenes, the Pirates righty, was the unanimous National League Cy Young winner in 2025, led the majors with a 1.97 ERA. Just an incredible season. And because of that, he received a record $3.3 million from the pre-arbitration bonus pool.
We hear about this pool a lot, but for the listener who doesn't track player economics, how exactly does this bonus pool work? And how did Skeens get such a huge payout?
It's a mechanism that was established in the 2022 CBA, and it's designed to make sure top young players get paid fairly before they're eligible for arbitration. It's a massive multi-million dollar pool that gets distributed every year.
And players qualify based on performance.
Right, performance metrics. Finishing in the top five for MVP or Cy Young, which Skeens did, or being named Rookie of the Year, or achieving high WAR metrics in your first three seasons. Skeens' Cy Young win triggered the top payout bracket, and it raised his two-year pre-arb earnings to over $5.5 million. It's a direct financial reward for elite performance.
And finally, a fascinating technical development involving the new automated ball strike challenge system.
This is great. Guardians prospect Trenton Denholm is already adapting his pitch mix to exploit the new system, which is set to debut officially in 2026. He's added both a knuckleball and a sinker to his repertoire. The strategy here is brilliant.
Why a knuckleball? Of all pitches, how is that effective against an automated system?
The BABS system relies on predictive models based on spin and trajectory. Pitches with extremely low or chaotic spin, like a knuckleball or a high-movement sinker, they challenge the AI's ability to accurately predict the ball's final location over the plate.
So he thinks the knuckleball could steal more strikes.
That's the theory, that the unpredictable flutter could make the zone definition more generous to non-traditional pitches. It's just a great example of players immediately strategizing around new technologies.
Okay, let's turn our attention out west to the Seattle Mariners. The 2025 season will be remembered for one of the most incredible individual power displays in history.
Cal Raleigh, becoming the first catcher and only the seventh player ever to hit 60 home runs in a single season.
It was just the stuff of legend. He carried that team offensively, finished just four votes shy of the AL MVP award, and he powered the Mariners all the way to the American League Championship Series.
They fell just one game short of the World Series, but that team proved they were a true contender.
And he had incredible support from that core. Julio Rodriguez continues to be an all-around superstar. He logged a career-high 6.8 BVOL and a 128 OPS plus man and finished sixth in MVP voting.
And you can't forget the bullpen. Andrés Muñoz established himself as a true lockdown closer. 38 saves, a 1.73 ERA. The fact that the Mariners had both a generational power season and a dominant core clicking at the same time, it led to some incredible playoff moments.
Let's just revisit those emotional moments for a second.
They provided heroics that will define that franchise for years. You had Jorge Polanco with the walk-off RBI single in the 15th inning of ALDS Game 5 against the Tigers.
An unbelievable game.
And then in the ALCS, Eugenio Suarez blasted a grand slam in Game 5 in a tie game, which briefly gave them the series lead. Those emotional highs just cemented that core as a legitimate force.
So now that they're firmly in contention mode, the Mariners face that really challenging balancing act that every successful team has to deal with.
Integrating their next wave of high-ceiling hitting prospects without disrupting that established core.
This is the critical, really delicate stage of their draft, develop, and trade strategy. Management, Jerry Dipoto, and Justin Hollander. They've made a promise to the players and the fans.
They've committed to letting young players tell us it's their time, and they've promised not to artificially block them.
That sounds great in theory, but rookie volatility can absolutely kill a contention window. How are they navigating the pressure from guys like Cole Young, Colt Emerson, Ben Williamson, and the catcher Harry Ford all hitting the upper minors at the same time?
They have to rely heavily on positional flexibility and veteran insurance. Hollander stressed how much they rely on versatile guys like Jorge Polanco and Leo Rivas, who were so vital last year, just to provide cover when a top prospect inevitably struggles.
Cole Young's debut is the perfect example of this challenge.
It is. Young started off rough. I mean, he went a miserable 1-for-19. That can crush a team's morale and a player's confidence if you don't have support.
But management showed patience.
They did. And he stabilized. He had a great 6 or 7 weeks before he just ran out of gas. Their whole philosophy is that you're never going to have the team that you want to have in September, in April. You have to rely on depth and that versatility to handle those natural rookie performance peaks and valleys.
So the goal is just to acquire as many versatile players as possible so they can deploy the next young guy without sacrificing wins.
Flexibility is paramount. Think about Harry Ford. He's a high-end catching prospect, but Cal Raleigh is entrenched after hitting 60 home runs.
Right.
So Ford needs to play. They need the versatility to let him get reps at DH, corner infield, maybe even corner outfield, just to keep his bat developing. It's about managing high-value assets and making sure they stay motivated and productive, even if their primary position is blocked.
We also saw the Mariners looking for some veteran depth with the signing of the 38-year-old journeyman righty Casey Lawrence.
Yeah, Lawrence, who has a career 6.42 ERA, threw 5 games with Seattle last year. And that signing, it's usually just a footnote, but it really highlights that constant search for non-roster, high-mileage organizational depth.
When your payroll is committed to the core, you need those low-cost insurance policies in AAA.
Ready to soak up innings if an injury hits, exactly.
And speaking of depth, the Brewers, coming off their 97-win season, are also looking for some familiar faces to fill out their rotation.
The obvious candidate for a reunion there is the lefty, Jose Quintana. The 36-year-old declined his $15 million mutual option, but he's still a workmanlike starter. He's logged over 165 innings 9 times in his career,
including 24 starts for Milwaukee last season.
Right, and his ERA has been sub-4 for the last 4 seasons. That consistency, even if the advanced metrics aren't stellar, that is immensely valuable.
It is. Milwaukee desperately needs rotation depth and bulk innings.
Quintana could be a high-end swingman for them, soak up innings out of the bullpen, or fill in as a back-end starter. It saves innings for their younger, higher-velocity arms over the long season. They should be highly motivated to strike another deal if he's willing to take a short-term contract at a slightly lower salary.
As we move into the quieter, more reflective parts of the offseason, let's look back on some of the biggest moments and stories that shape baseball culture. And we have to start with the dramatic conclusion of the 2025 season. The Dodgers winning Game 7 of the World Series.
The drama was immense. The Dodgers getting their second straight trophy in a nail-biting Game 7 against the Blue Jays was a modern classic. We have to rewind to the late innings to really appreciate the chaos.
The Blue Jays had the lead late. The Dodgers were facing elimination. And then Miguel Rojas, of all people, hits the game-tying home run.
And that wasn't even the most dramatic moment in the ninth. With one out and the bases loaded, a sharp grounder was hit to Rojas, who was playing in. He had to rush the throw home to a stretching Will Smith to get the bang-bang out at the plate and stop the winning run from scoring.
That defensive play forced extra innings.
It did. And then the 11th inning heroics.
Will Smith, who had just made that crucial defensive play, hits the game-winning solo home run.
But the moment that truly defined that series and maybe cemented the Dodgers' dynasty mentality was the performance of the World Series MVP, Yoshinobu Yamamoto.
He pitched his third inning of relief in Game 7 after throwing 96 pitches just the day before in Game 6.
That kind of workload is almost unheard of in modern baseball. It's unbelievable.
It is. He was running on pure adrenaline and just competitive fire. He induced the final 2 outs on a single play. Mookie Betts cleanly catching a fly ball, touching second, and throwing to Freddie Freeman at first to clinch the championship.
Yamamoto's sacrifice and the managerial decision to even push him to that limit, it just spoke volumes about that team's win-at-all-costs mentality.
Away from the field, Shohei Ohtani continues to cement his status as a philanthropic icon. He recently launched the Shohei Ohtani Family Foundation.
The foundation has a dual, very personal mission. It focuses heavily on rescuing animals, which is fitting since he's a proud owner of his dog, Decoy,
right,
and on inspiring children globally to stay active and live well. This is part of a deliberate pattern of generosity we've seen from him since he came to Los Angeles.
This isn't just a new celebrity foundation either. He has a documented history of significant giving.
Absolutely. In 2025 alone, he donated $500,000 for LA wildfire relief. And back in 2024, he and the Dodgers committed $1 million for earthquake relief in Japan. His foundation work is a clear sign that his connection to both the LA community and his home country is a major personal commitment.
Now let's turn to a rare moment of cross-rivalry respect. The Boston Red Sox gave their Tony Conigliaro Award to a New York Yankee.
Yeah, to the reliever Tim Hill. This award, which recognizes a player who overcomes adversity through spirit and determination, is a huge honor, and Hill is the first Yankee ever to receive it in its 25-year history, which just underscores the severity of what he overcame.
And what was the specific adversity he overcame?
Hill was diagnosed with stage 3 colon cancer back in 2015 while he was still a minor leaguer. He went through 8 months of chemotherapy, lost a lot of weight, but he persevered and eventually made his MLB debut in 2018.
And the adversity was compounded by the fact that he'd previously lost his own father to the same cancer in 2007.
That's right. It's an incredible story of resilience.
Hill is also known for his unique pitching style as a sidearmer.
He is. He's a ground ball specialist known for his sinker and that sidearm delivery. He ranked second in the majors in ground ball percentage in 2025. This cross-rivalry praise just highlights that while the Yankees and Red Sox have that fierce competitive spirit, the human element overcoming a life-threatening illness is something that transcends the game.
Finally, let's look at the baseball history explored in the documentary United by Baseball, which shines a light on Colorado's really diverse baseball past.
The documentary illustrates how deep baseball history runs in Colorado. It arrived with the Gold Rush back in 1858, 18 years before the territory even became a state. It details the early teams in mining towns like the Leadville Blues and farming communities like the Greeley Grays.
But the section on race and the color barrier is the most historically significant part.
Absolutely. The focus is on the Denver Post Tournament, which was known as the Little World Series of the West. In 1934, it became a landmark event because it was the first major tournament to invite black and white teams to play against each other.
Specifically featuring the Kansas City Monarchs from the Negro Leagues.
Right, playing against white teams. And historians credit this event with actively accelerating the breaking of the color barrier. Yeah. One historian in the film argues that without the Denver Post Tournament, Jackie Robinson would not have broken the color barrier in 1947. It would have happened later. This public, highly successful integration forced owners and fans to confront their biases and see black players competing at the highest level. It's a key, often overlooked moment in baseball history.
And the documentary also highlights the powerful resilience of Japanese Americans during World War II.
It did. It covered the Japanese Americans who were interned in camps like Amache between 1942 and 1945. They formed their own baseball teams and leagues, playing for a sense of community and joy, and partly as a demonstration of loyalty to the United States, even while being confined in those awful conditions. It's just a powerful testament to the game's ability to provide hope and structure, even in the darkest, most divided times.
This offseason is already defined by strategic aggression and these huge financial gambles. We cover the exorbitant cost of the Blue Jays' bid for the World Series with that Dylan Cease signing, and we analyzed whether that massive risk is worth the potential reward.
We looked at the radical shifting dynamics for the Yankees and Mets as they chase top bats, and the necessary financial cleanup that teams like the Angels have to do just to participate in the superstar market.
The recurring theme really is that battle between the high-spending teams and disciplined organizational strategy. Hal Steinbrenner argued that money doesn't guarantee success, pointed to past failures.
Yet the sheer dominance of the Dodgers, fueled by money, is actively challenging their competitors. It's even inspiring guys like Tatsuya Imai to declare he wants to take them down rather than join them. The ultimate question isn't just how much money is spent, but how effectively that money is used to fix your weaknesses.
We've seen the Mariners have a historic season carried by a 60 home run catcher, and now they face the challenge of balancing that winning core with debuting a huge wave of hitting prospects. A real strategic tightrope walk.
And we saw the Blue Jays, already one win away from a title, decide to throw caution to the wind and pay an exorbitant price for a high-risk pitcher.
So this leaves us with a final provocative thought for you to consider. When a team that is already this close, like the Mariners or the Blue Jays, decides to throw caution to the wind and pay whatever it takes, whether it's $210 million for a volatile arm or a potential $400 million contract for a superstar outfielder,
yeah.
Will that financial risk always justify the ultimate reward of lifting the trophy?
Or will the cost of a bad contract ultimately sink a legitimate contender? The 2026 season may soon give us the answer.
You know that wellness goal you set at the start of the year? It's not too late to stick with it and make your future self proud, especially with the all-in-one nutrition shake from Ka'Chava. With 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and more. No fillers, no nonsense, just the highest quality ingredients. Stick with your wellness goals. Go to kachava.com and use code NEWS for 15% off. That's KACHAVA.com, code NEWS.